My name is Angela Hornsby, and I'm here with Deacon William Thomas at Greater St. Paul Missionary Baptist Church. The date is March 29, 1999, and we're here as part of the Southern Oral History Program's New Immigrants Project. And Deacon Thomas, my first question is if you could just basically state your name.
Name is William Thomas. I'm the president of the Albright Community Association, which covers this entire community where the church sits.
Can you tell me about how large that community is,
Albright? Albright covers in Durham from Miami Boulevard going to Holloway Street, the site where the school sits, and then it goes from there to Gill Street to Holloway Street, and then it goes from Holloway Street to Miami Boulevard. So it covers, I never counted the blocks, but it's a large segment in Northeast Central Durham.
And how long have you been president?
1 year and 2 months. What happened, Albright itself is a very old organization, which goes back into 1984-85 when it was organized. Northeast Central Durham came in existence about 5 years ago. So the community-based organization, they kind of weathered away because everybody consolidated under Northeast Central Durham. But due to the various things happening in the community, deteriorating the houses, prostitution, drug activities, and other undesirable activities, the people in the Albright community came together and decided they wanted their organization revisit and revise. So January 20th, 98, the Albright Community Association was rebirthed. And they, I end up being president of the organization.
I want to touch upon more about Albright and your activities as part of the community, but I wanted to kind of get a little bit of family history from you. So, with that in mind, I was wondering if you could tell me about your family, your grandparents. What did they do? Who were they?
I'm a Durham resident. I grew up, my parents moved here from Shelby, North Carolina when I was a year and a half of age. So I consider Durham as my home. I know nothing about Shelby at all. My father, he worked at a place called Carey Lumber Company and Watts Hospital for many years until he was deceased. My mother, she worked at American Tobacco, League of Miles, and then she also did a little housework here and there. Later in life, she went into the ministry and began preaching. She pastored a church until she went in retirement after what bad health set in, and so she expired about 3-4 years ago. As for myself, I live 26 years in New York. It's when I left Durham and relocated to New York. In 1971, I relocated back to Durham. But even in New York, I've always been quite interested in communities, what was going on. I headed up a community organization in Bedford Stuyvesant because the same identical thing that's happening here in Albright and Northeast Central Durham, it was going on there. I've been involved with people practically all my life, community-wise, work-wise. New York, I worked as a company foreman in the one factory, which went around the clock, three shifts. We had Jews, which owned the business. other Jews worked there. We had Italians. One of the Italians was the company general manager. I was the company foreman. We had Puerto Ricans. We had Spanish. We had blacks. And what else did we have? Oh, we had a few West Indians. Mm-hmm. All working for the same company on the same payroll, doing different things. And so it's nothing new, me working with people. Mm-hmm. I have a variety of years of experience of working with a diversity, nationalities. And fortunately, I've been blessed to always have a good relationship with people in general.
You mentioned doing a lot of community service work mm-hmm. in New York.
Right.
Who do you think influenced your, I guess, verb to do that type of work, to be involved in the community?
I think it's more of a God-given gift than anything else, because I do not ask for these positions, but for some reason I end up being drafted with an insistence that we want you to be the president. And it seemed hard to say no, because most time when they come at me like that, they do not understand the answer no. So I end up with it. But I have no problem with it, because I notice the way things fall in lines. You know, in New York, we had two games in the community, teenage game, a girls game, and then what they call a junior game, all in the same community. But we was able to rally up enough people support that the message eventually got to them loud and clear that you're not going to take over our community. And finally, they got the meshes. We was able to go after the police department. I think they are the 79th precinct on Gates Avenue in Bedford-Stuyvesant. That policemen would start really fulfilling their jobs in the community, which more street patrol. Sometimes they have a habit sitting up in the movie house. We had two theaters in the community. Go in the movie, you'll see them sitting up in the air-conditioned movie theater. So we finally was able to get to the right people, that they came out and started walking their beats. We began to get extra day sanitation cleanup from the sanitation department. Many streets where they had street signs, and people, rather than stop completely, they slow down and come right through. We had two kids that was maimed by cars doing this. So we went after police and traffic department to install traffic stop lights, and we were successful at that. So the achievement was very great. We was able to set up a food pantry, clothes closet. We just had a whole lot of things going for everyone in the community, because we set up also with the YMCA there and the YWCA there. Here, I think you only have the one, the YMCA, am I right? But you had a YWCA there. We was able to establish contact with those organizations whereby young people in the community could go in the afternoon for swimming and other activities and all, you know. And so it worked out very well, very well.
Time was all this activity taking place? The 60s or?
This was in the 60s, okay. During the 60s. And one thing I left out, we also was able to get people really involved in the community, which I was the president of the organization. I had a West Indy that was vice president. I had another foreigner was held the position. So we had in our organization, if you came to us with a house complaint where the landlord was not doing his part for house deterioration, we were seeing what we call ABBA inspectors to look at your complaint and your concerns. And if they were justified, we could talk with the rent commissioner there, rent control commissioner, his office. And you did not have to pay rent until the problem was corrected. Mm-hmm. And this was a big influence with people and landlord and what we call absentee landlords, whereby they just come collect the rent, wouldn't fix anything. But once you start holding the rent back, then you got some action. And that's a law in New York. I mean, you cannot, like in Durham here, you cannot charge a person $500 and $600 a month rent for a ragged house or a ragged apartment, something that's worth maybe $100 or $200, because of this rent control they have there, which was good protection for the people. And we use that to the max. The people would be serviced. Hopefully we get that in Durham.
How did you end up in New York? You mentioned coming to live in Durham from Shelby, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, through the years, especially that time, you hear so much about New York, mm-hmm. you know, like the streets is gold and and all the other good stuff to go with it. And so after so much years and other things, you know, I kept thinking about it. I said I'd give it a try.
So when did you move to New York?
I moved to New York in 49.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And could you describe a little bit of your life in Durham before that time?
Well, in Durham,
where
I mean.
Where did you live?
Okay, in Durham, I lived in the Hayti section. I grew up in Brookstown. Mm-hmm. After growing up, married, moving out on my own, I lived in Hayti. I worked at East Campus and in food preparation.
Duke University
mm-hmm. East Campus. And East Campus would close down in the summer months, and students that stayed would go to West Campus. So at the meantime, employees at Duke could get jobs other places, in the mountains, places like that. I had no desire of going to those other jobs. So the boss at the time, a fellow called Mr. Cox, he wanted to know that I want to go to West Campus. So I did. And so I went to West Campus, supposed to be for the summer months, but not bragging, not boosting. But they thought that my work was so good, I was a good worker, they wanted me to stay. So the two campus bosses, director, negotiated that, if, you know, and I agreed to stay on the West Campus. Mm-hmm. So that's where permanently I ended up being until I left Durham and went to New York. There I worked in a bakery department. I was in charge of the salad department. Mm-hmm. I used to make all of the dressings. Mm-hmm. All your salads was made fresh, even frozen salads, congealed salads. We had a whole list of salads. We made anything, you know, anything and everything. Mm-hmm. Thousand Island French dressing, blue cheese, Russian dressings. We made all of that right in the salad department. And I ended up being supervised over that. So we fed the students. We in there like about 5 o'clock in the morning, make sure the orange juice was made. Mm-hmm. No bought orange juice at that time. Everything was squeezed fresh. Wow. And many times I cut my hand and all that stuff trying to cut orange juice, you know. But the juice and everything be ready for the student. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we had to be ready at 6 o'clock mm-hmm. up there to serve the students for breakfast and all. But it was always ready.
And yeah. This is at Duke University?
It's the West Campus.
Yeah.
And East Campus, both, yeah.
And
Duke University, yeah.
So, sort of just backtracking just a little bit, tell me about sort of growing up in Durham when your parents moved here. Mm-hmm. And did they settle in Hayti or did they settle somewhere else? Just tell me a little bit about growing up.
It's Sally in Brookstown. Okay. In Brookstown. And Brookstown's very close, tight community. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, the Port Shelby, North Carolina, I know nothing about it all. All I know is Durham and growing up in Durham, you know. It was a normal, average life. We had our little neighborhood teams. We played ball, baseball, football, basketball. Anything the young people do today, we did it then. But the community was a very tight-knit community. Everyone knew everyone. There was two churches in the community, West Durham Baptist and Mount Ollie, Amy Zion Church. I was a member of my family, John, Mount Ollie, Amy Zion Church. But most of our activities and everything really was with West Durham Baptist. We had a Boy Scout troop at West Durham Baptist. I was a patrol leader for the pack. Also became assistant scoutmaster at an early age. Even then, those days, I built a house for my pack to meet in. We had a big, nice backyard, plenty of room. So I built a clubhouse in the backyard for my guys, for us to meet in and have fun and thing, you know. We camp at West Elm Baptist Church in the backyard overnight. Duke Woods, West Campus, end of it, all of Duke Woods, we claim Duke Woods as our woods because we'd be out there in the summertime. We go out there and find blackbirds, and we find the wild trees and peaches and pearls, apples, or whatever. And we got enough of people in the community. We pick our blackbirds and bring the community and sell them for 10 cents a peck. A peck, I think that's what we call them. Made our little 10, 15 cents from everybody was cooking blackberry pies and stuff, you know. But it was a normal kid's life, you know, and very tight. We had ball teams that's played other communities like Walltown and a community called Hickstown. Mm-hmm. We used to play against them, you know. And, We was pretty hard to beat because we were just tight buddies, you know. Yeah.
What impact did segregation have growing up?
On me?
Yeah.
That's why I get in trouble. with me, very low. I'll tell you why. I guess it's a God instilled thing in me. I have never feared, man. I hear a lot today about low self-esteem and low morals, but I've always held my head ever since I knew me. Mm-hmm. If you was wrong and you crossed me, I will let you know where I stood, mm-hmm. even as a child. And that's the thing that's just always been a part of me. Mm-hmm. I found that my growing up days, and even today still, I never feared white man, not black man. I can stand and look a man in his eyes and talk to him on a 101, and he will understand one thing. I'm going to respect you, mm-hmm. and it's best for you that you respect mm-hmm. me. Because if you disrespect me, you got a problem, you know. And so, really, my problem with racial-wise has always been the very minimum. Because I'm not into this racial thing. Mm-hmm. Me, I have no reason to be. I know some people, everyone don't have the same outlook. I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, a man is man. A human being is a human being. And I respect human beings. Mm-hmm. I treat you nice. And at the same time, I no one should ever misunderestimate me and think that I'm going to be their walking post. You don't walk on me. And people that know me know this, so I don't have no problem. I don't have the problems that a lot of people, I hear from coming from a lot of people, you know. Because even now, like, I sit with a lot of different groups, you know, the city of Durham. I sit with the housing, substandard housing, affordable housing. I sit with Weed Seed. And
is that you're on these committees?
Or yeah.
Okay.
I'm also an interim chair for Northeast Central Durham. So this means that from one meeting to another, someone is meeting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit as an advisory committee person to the chief of police. I've served with Dave Thompson, the county manager. Zero Tolerance Committee. I've set the table with the city mayor, the city manager, with the Weed Seed Project.
And what does Weed Seed try to do?
Weed Seeds, that's a project where by Northeast Central Durham, for example, was a target community. And so you weed out the bad, mm-hmm. which is drug, prostitution, deteriorated housing, these things, and you seed them with the battle reverse, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but even at these meetings and all, sitting at the table with these different people and all, I mean, I fully respect my other comrades, and they fully respect me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I raise my hand to speak, they listen. When they have the flow, I'll listen.
Mm-hmm.
So, as it ends up, it's a good relationship in general. Because even in these meetings, I mean, they know me too. Whatever I have to say, I say it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that's the way it is.
Just quickly, how did you come to meet your wife?
Well, this is my second marriage. Okay. And I knew her before I left Durham.
Mm-hmm.
But on my return back to Durham, one visit I made back on Mother's Day from New York. And you know, our friends, old friends come to see each other. They come back home and, end up, she was divorced. I was divorced. I was getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started talking about old times briefly. Then we went to new time. And so from there, letters started coming to me from Durham, and she was receiving letters from me from New York, plus telephone calls every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it continued to grow and grow. So finally we said, well, may as well.
And he had children.
Yeah. I had two. She had three daughters.
Okay. And so again, at a certain point, you felt like New York was appealing to you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went to New York, where did you settle? Was it Bedford? Sorry, stop the center.
When I first went to New York, I moved in Harlem.
Okay.
Okay. And after 7 years, I relocated and moved to Bedford Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. And from Bedford Stuyvesant, I spent the rest of the years there until moving back to Durham.
In 71?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you mentioned working with a diverse group of people.
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience?
One of the best in the world. Because I find that people is just people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you mean by that? You talk about racialness. and I've seen it among everyone. The company I was working with, we had some Italians there.
And what company again?
This was Knit Farm Mills Incorporated, okay, and Savoy Knitting Mills. They underwent two different names. You had Italians there. We had two Italians that couldn't stand, hated the Jews that owned the business. Mm-hmm. Couldn't stand them. And everybody knew it. But the thing that was so dumb and stupid, you don't like these people, you can't stand them, but you're crazy enough to be working for them, getting their check every week, mm-hmm, living off of their money, mm-hmm, but yet running around talking about what you don't like. I mean, to me, you're a bunch of nuts, you know? Okay. We had Puerto Ricans and we had Spanish, mm-hmm, okay? You want to get into a real serious problem because they look alike. They've all talked that same Latin talk. Mm-hmm. So listen to them talking, all you don't know who is who, right? Okay. But you want a real serious problem? You mistakenly call a Spanish a Puerto Rico. You better be ready to fight. Mm-hmm. Because the Spanish was so superior over the Puerto Ricans. Now, this one you wouldn't believe. You ever been to New York?
Never.
You wouldn't believe this one. The Puerto Ricans that grew up in the cities of Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And then you had some Puerto Ricans that grew up in the country of Puerto Rico. Well, the ones that grew up in the cities, even though they're Puerto Ricans, they are superior to the ones that grew up, that came from the country part of it. So the whole thing, the whole thing just don't make sense to me, you know? None at all. But I never did get involved in those things. I mean, I had a good relationship with all of them. I was their foreman. They're here you call supervisors and managers. New York, you're considered as a foreman, mm-hmm, okay? So my job was to oversee the operation, make sure you did your work right. And if you were spayoyo, whatever you was, it made no difference. You're here to do a job. And no arguing, no bickering, no nothing, you know, because we had a very strong union there. And any type of confrontation, you automatically fired. Two things was not tolerated on the job, and this is in a job, I'm sure, fighting and stealing. So you may have your little disagreement, but you better keep as a disagreement and get your work done. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're out of here. And they knew this. So if you want to work, do your work. You got no problem, you know. Because I pick up the phone and send you down to the union hall, talk to the union delegate, you know.
Now, while you were in New York, outside of the workplace, did you have occasion to interact with Puerto Ricans?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure. Many times after work hours, the general manager, myself, which is Italian, he was, we were, at that time, you know, I go to bar once in a while. Mm-hmm. So we go to bar after work hours and talk about one thing done and all. And he lived in the Long Island area. But, you know, we'd be together. He'd be in Bedford Stuyvesant with me, you know. And many times there was, you know, how New York is, the bars and all. We'd go to bars, mm-hmm, and after work hours, the Puerto Ricans or whoever is there. As a matter of fact, this is the garment district in New York. So you have a variety of different nationalities working there. And I knew quite a few people around there, you know. So I would talk to whoever, you know. Only thing hurt you once in a while, you know, you know these guys, some of them you work with and work around, or you know they speak English. Mm-hmm. And then sometime they come on, you know, and they kind of, you know, say, I feel like jamming something down your throat, you know. But that was okay, too, you know. But, yeah, I've been in that company quite a bit.
So, the kids that you had with your second wife or and your wife's kids, did they remain or did they settle in Durham or are they sort of spread out?
They was in Durham.
Okay.
What happened after we decided to really marry and all that, you know, first of looking around for a place in New York, but I didn't find nothing that, you know, that I particularly like for family and all, so then I decided I would come back to Durham. And so they was already in Durham.
Okay. By 7-1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you came back to Durham, where did you settle again?
Haytie.
Haytie.
Mm-hmm. Haytie section.
Okay. And you may have been away during this time, but were you involved in any respect in the civil rights movement?
Yeah. You know what, believe me or not, we was involved in these things before there was a Martin Luther King confrontation. What's the guy's name? It'll have to come to me. James Farmer.
Yes.
Core.
Mm-hmm.
You know him? You heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. James Farmer Core. It seemed though history.
Yeah.
Seemed like history has forgotten all about him. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You never hear anything about him. But before there was a Martin Luther King, there was a Core, and there was a James Farmer. And when we first formed our organization in Brooklyn, you had a branch, a Core branch in Bedford-Stuyvesant. So knowing the strength of that organization, once we really got organized and got things rolling, that was one of the first things on the agenda, to hook up with the Brooklyn branch of Core.
Mm-hmm.
Because knowing that we was going to need some additional support, okay? And so what happened, we went out and, you know, we had these stop signs, as I said before, and kids have the fire hydrant on the summer out there with the water and all, and cars were just wouldn't stop completely. They would slow down and shoot right through the street. So we had two kids to be hit by cars this way, playing with water. Now, we had been in behind policemen and who was the mayor then? Seemed like Mayor Lindsay. Mm-hmm. He was the mayor. And we had been in behind city officials about these things for more safety, you know, stop lights and all. So after the third, it happened to the third kid, this one we say, this is enough. So what we did, we planned a drastic plan of action. And we planned this thing that we would go out this particular day, at this particular time, the busy time, people's coming in from work. We was going to tie up every traffic area in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And we hit all of those corners. And I don't know where all the peoples came from. We have ladies out there with baby strollers and men's, and we just had the whole Bedford-Stuyvesant tied up.
Mm-hmm.
At this particular hour, couldn't nothing move. So here come the policemen, threatened to put everybody in jail. They brought the big paddy wagon and all. There was a minister, George Lawrence, had a church he pastored on Green Avenue. When Martin Luther King came to Brooklyn, came to New York, Reverend Lawrence, he was King's spokesperson, and this was in Bedford-Stuyvesant too. George Lawrence, that was his name. He was with us. We called CORE for support, and they came and support us. So when the deal went down, after a couple of hours out there with the policemen, with their threats and everything else, finally another fella came from the city and agreed to set up a meeting with all city officials to hear our concern and our grievance. So we set this up for the next week. They came, and we had a list. And the fellow from the Commission of Human Rights, he was a liaison. And he came with us, and he gave us all kind of support, you know. But even Brooklyn Court then, and I never hear talk of Martin Luther King at this time, but Court was there, James Farmer, you know.
And this is in the 60s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, yeah. Now, there's no put down for King, because even, you know, next year somebody else will pop up, you know. Yeah. But I often wonder what happened to James Farmer, that the work that he's involved in, the civil rights movement, everything else, why, you know, you hear so much about some of these other guys, but you never hear anything about him. But I remember him well, him and his organization, yeah.
That's yeah. Very important
yeah.
Point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got 10 minutes. I'm supposed to be at the City Housing Authority at 4 o'clock. I got a meeting there at 4 o'clock.
Okay. In your opinion, what makes focusing on Durham, what makes a strong community?
What makes a strong community? I think that somewhere along the line we've got too modern. And I know that we're in a different day, things changes. But sometimes I think we need to step back and evaluate where we are, where we was, and look at where we are today, look at what we used to do and what we do today, and see what's really going on. Because some of these new things is not working. Only thing they're doing, creating more problems, causing more headaches, more aggravation for families, communities, everything else. And I'm talking about the day when I remember well, when parents had some control over their children without all this other legal interference in family lives. Mm-hmm. When people in communities was a community that where everyone practically knew each other and could look out for each other. Somebody breaking in your house, that next door neighbor, somebody gonna see something, you know. These teenage pregnancy, these kids dropping out of school, not going to school, and it seemed though it just told her out of hand now. I was in the street 5 or 6 times a day, and everywhere I look, I see the street full of children that should be in school. And there seemed to be no law to say that you got to go to school. I mean, I know the law is there, but what good is it? It's not being enforced. Parents used to be held accountable for their children. But now for these kids, these tough ones, to go to school and have their way, do their thing, no respect for teachers, school, nobody else. And everyone blamed the school system for it, but nobody looked at the parents. And parents should be held accountable for their children's ways and their deeds they're doing. So what I'm seeing, these new things that we're into today, only thing they're doing is destroying communities, schools, neighborhoods, and make the country look very bad in general, because it's more than a Durham thing. It's a nationwide thing. And to me, it just don't make sense. A child ought to be a child. And if the parents get... Now, I remember one time, I think it was something they call like a reformatory school or something like that. But see, all this stuff, they outlaw. And what I'm saying, don't put all the kids there. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that some of these kids, you got to do more than put a little Band-Aid on their little scratch. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to scratch them good and let them know that, you know, you cannot go around living in this society doing anything you want to do. And if you don't check yourself, buddy, we're going to put you out in that field that you pick some cotton, crop, you know, get some tobacco, do something, you know. With some despair, you know, you're going to have a time to get up. You're going to have a time to go to bed. You're going to have a time to read, to study, you know. It's something that's got to be done to bring some, and need to start with the parents, really. Your parents need to start doing their job and taking their responsibility and stop leaving it to state, to school, to raise their kids. There was 12 of us. I'm the second oldest. No one, my mother and father raised us. It wasn't not left to the school. They disciplined us, you know. And we knew there was something that was not allowed, you know. I couldn't be in the school street to 12, 1 o'clock at night when I was a kid. What's a kid been? What's a kid doing street at 12, 1 o'clock at night? And society accepts this. It's crazy. It don't make sense. And the only thing you do, continue causing taxpayer more money and more money. And then they keep talking about the high taxes. But it's so dumb and stupid. You know, that's the only way I know how to say things, just say them the way I say them. You know? And it's just dumb and stupid. Anytime society need to think about what we're doing. Anytime you got school kids, kids in a school, and you got to take taxpayers' money to place a policeman and two policemen and somebody else in the school to try to keep children in order, in line. Something is badly wrong with this country. Something is wrong, you know.
Okay. Let me try to ask you really quickly about your feelings about the Latino influx into the Northeast Central Dorm, and what you've been trying to do to address that.
Okay. Well, this community here, this will be the third community fellowship festival that we're having. We're having one this coming Saturday at which will be April the 3rd at right here, Juniper Street, right down the hill. We have a community garden site there. We're going to start at 11 o'clock. We're going to have an Easter egg hunt for the children in the community, a cookout for people in general in the community. All events will start 11 o'clock to 3. Mm-hmm. We have permit already to block the street off down there so cars won't be coming through upsetting anybody. Mm-hmm. In this, we have flyers out in the community in English and Hispanic. Hispanics has flyers too. Mm-hmm. So we are looking for a good turnout with Hispanics. And along with us, we're looking for, I would say it wouldn't be surprised we didn't end up with a couple hundred people down there Saturday. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the third time we've done this. The general idea is that we all live in this community together. And they are not going anywhere because they continue to come. Mm-hmm. Okay? We are not going anywhere because we've been here too many years. So, the catch 20 is, since that's the way it is, we're in this community together, some kind of way we've got to learn that we must live together in here in peace and in harmony without anyone being afraid or fearful of anyone. I know we've had some problems in here, but policemen has been doing a very good job. We are doing all we can to build a good relationship, to bridge that racial gap that we are no better than you, and you are no better than us. We are just people trying to live in a community together. And so as we continue to bring the two races together, I think this is going to be a real asset to being able to really build a trust, confidence, and work together and help build a good community. We are in behind now some of these landlords or homeowners or whoever it is that have these deteriorated houses. that they rent to the Hispanics and charge them all that excess monies. Mm-hmm. Because I guess so many of them live in a house and they work together, they can, I guess, no problem for them to pool $800 a month, $600 a month, you know. But our concern is fair play, even to the Hispanics, whoever mm-hmm. it affect. We, and it's what the housing that I serve with, servicing the community, we try to send a clear signal that the people in this community is to live in safety, without fear, in good relationship one with the other. Your beer and wine stores, we don't want in this community. Anything that deteriorate and help bring the community down, we invite people to carry your business.